Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Adams. This episode features Dr. Jason Farley on optimizing PrEP selection and persistence for men who have sex with men. Dr. Farley is a professor in the School of Nursing and Medicine at Johns Hopkins University and a nurse practitioner in the Department of Infectious Diseases at the John G. Bartlett Specialty Practice in Baltimore, Maryland. For the full online educational program, please visit the link in the show notes for this episode. Now let's get started and hear what Dr. Farley has to say about optimizing PrEP.
Hello, everyone. Today we'll be discussing the use of pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, for people who identify as men who have sex with other men. Now, this is a clinical term and a research designation that many folks don't feel comfortable with. You might also hear interchangeably the terms same gender loving or sexual and gender minority. Some other folks might prefer the term LGBTQ and any of the letters that go along with those, that acronym. Others, as you may be quite familiar with, if they're more of a youth culture, might prefer the term queer, that's all encompassing of LGBTQ. But for the purposes of this discussion or this podcast, we're going to be focusing our conversation around men who have sex with other men, or MSM. When we think about the importance of HIV prevention for this population, we really need to think about the overwhelming epidemiology in the United States that demonstrates to us that new HIV infections are concentrated in this community, and that there's a large disparity amongst race and ethnicity, which influences a variety of different things clinically that we need to think about. First and foremost, let me say clearly and emphatically that it is racism and structural and social determinants of health that are influencing the disease outcomes, disease burden that we're seeing that are disparate amongst racial groups and nothing to do with race or ethnicity in and of itself. But when we look at the data from the CDC and estimates suggesting that new HIV infections continue to be of men who have sex with men, and when we look at that African-American MSM and Hispanic MSM are overrepresented in those numbers, it's important to then also look and see, well, if they're overrepresented, how are we doing in relation to our offer of prevention services for these populations? And if you haven't had a moment to really sit down and reflect on this, you should take a look at AIDSVU.org, which is spelled AIDSVU.org. And you can see some wonderful analysis of how we've had a dramatic increase since the FDA approved oral tenofovir disoproxil fumarate with emtricitabine for PrEP in 2012 to today. Yet when we look more specifically at the greatest need for HIV prevention, we see those with the greatest need are BIPOC communities, are, you know, Black and brown communities in particular, having the greatest need and yet the lowest amount of uptake. And I think clinically, we would, you know, often say, well, there is a lot of reasons for that. And we would, you know, typically talk about issues related to potential medical mistrust, potential issues around provider-patient relationship. But I think it's that's an easy, almost a scapegoat circumstance at this point that are terms and suggestions that we like to throw around just to, in many ways, feel better about this, you know, egregious data. And so one of the first things I think it's important to highlight is the disparity is persistent year after year. And we as healthcare providers really have a significant role to play. Our role, first and foremost, begins with our ability and willingness to have a comprehensive sexual health conversation with everyone in our practice, regardless of any assumptions we may make about their sexual orientation or potential sexual risk. It's extremely important that we take a comprehensive sexual health history approach. We do so in a manner that really centers sexual pleasure as the most important aspect, and we demedicalize the conversation. It's not about risk reduction, or harm reduction. It is about, let's talk about your sex life, how that's going for you, really thinking about it from the perspective of pleasure, and really thinking about it in a comprehensive way, opening the dialogue for an exchange of conversation related to sex and sexuality as it relates to the overall health and well-being of, you know, the human population. Secondly, we need to fully understand and really understand how we offer PrEP to patients and the program that is PrEP, because it's more than just a pill. It's a program. And so we know that depending on a variety of different circumstances, that there are potentially up to four different options that men who have sex with men have FDA clearance to receive, three of which are FDA cleared and one is an off-label use. And we'll talk about each of those four options. The oldest, the one approved since 2012, is obviously emtricitabine with tenofovir disoproxil fumarate. But importantly, it has been shown to be highly efficacious, up to 99% effective in people who are highly adherent to this regimen. But it does come with long-term use, the potential for renal insufficiency and the potential for some bone demineralization. So in patients that we're concerned might have renal or bone-related deficiency, we have another option. We can go with tenofovir alafenamide with emtricitabine. And in that circumstance, there's more intracellular concentration of the drug, and therefore we see lower, although not completely negligible, but much lower rates of renal insufficiency as well as bone demineralization. With that particular drug, we do see one barrier, and that is often the need to demonstrate some level of intolerance or some level of concern about renal or bone issues. I personally have had multiple patients be denied the switch from tenofovir disoproxil fumarate with emtricitabine to tenofovir alafenamide with emtricitabine due to the lack of renal or bone insufficiency. Now, both of those agents have the challenge related to the patient's adherence to taking the therapy. And therefore, we have a potential third option, which has recently been FDA cleared, which is injectable cabotegravir. So across those three on-label FDA options, you have something basically for all men who have sex with men. There is an off-label option for oral tenofovir disoproxil fumarate with emtricitabine that is called on-demand or a 2-1-1 strategy in which a patient takes two tablets 2 to 24 hours before a sex act, one tablet the next day 24 hours later, and then one tablet 48 hours later and stops. Now, for patients who utilize on-demand strategies, these are individuals who do not frequently engage in sexual activity, or maybe their sexual activity is principally always protected sexual activity. And occasionally there is partners in which they engage in unprotected sex. On-demand is off-label use in that circumstance per the FDA, but it is recommended by the IAS USA as well as WHO guidelines for options in which individuals are infrequently encountering high-risk sexual practices. Let's transition, now that we've talked about those three options and the pros and cons of each, to getting your patient on these regimens. So the first thing I would like to just point out to make sure you're all aware about is the Ready, Set, PrEP website. You can find this at hiv.gov. So if you go to hiv.gov and then click on the link for ending the HIV epidemic, you can find a subset there called Ready, Set, PrEP. And Ready, Set, PrEP is a program that provides free PrEP HIV medication access to individuals who qualify. when we think beyond the oral versions of medication that would be available for through Ready, Set, Prep, long-acting injectable cabotegravir can be accessed through its manufacturer. Now, finally, the last point I will make is that once we successfully encourage people to understand their risk, understand the importance of PrEP, work with them through shared decision-making to get on a PrEP option that works for them and is appropriately covered from their insurance perspective or through a government assistance program, we now need to keep them in a program that sees them every 90 days if they're on oral meds and every 8 weeks if they're on injectable regimens. And we need to maintain PrEP persistence. In Baltimore, we've looked at our own data and shown that very few patients, less than, I can say it this way, 75% of patients don't complete all four visits in a 12-month period of time. Nationally, there have been cohorts that have shown that less than 40% of patients have PrEP persistence at 12 months. And so when you're thinking about what's right for your patient, I tell my patients this: even if you decide that the medication, the oral regimen or the injectable, is something you want to forego at this point, still come in and have a sexual health evaluation for HIV and STI kits. We can even do it via telemedicine and through home-based testing with a community health worker. It doesn't have to be a provider visit. For your sexual health, every 90 days, you know, appropriate to their sexual history. But at an every 90-day clip is really what I recommend, just so in case they've foregone taking preventative medication, we can still have an earlier diagnosis of STIs as well as HIV should it occur. I have many patients who develop like seasonal patterns of risk. So they will get into a relationship that was a one-time event that then subsequently moves into a much more monogamous form of a relationship. They forego PrEP and then feel like there's a huge chasm when that relationship ends and there's some stigma and shame around that relationship ending. And as a result of that, they often don't re-engage in clinic. And so right from the get-go, once a patient says, I think I'm going to be leaving PrEP and PrEP services, we need to set up follow-up for them from a sexual health perspective with HIV and STI testing and give them that open door welcome to return to your clinic for PrEP should they need it in the future. Finally, as we all know, thinking about primary care and HIV prevention, there are many other aspects of sexual health that should be addressed as part of a PrEP program, not to mention the least of which being appropriate vaccines for prevention of other infectious diseases. Also considering whether or not your risk tolerance would include the offer of doxycycline for STI post-exposure prophylaxis as well, or doxy PrEP or PEP in the right circumstance. So again, the sexual health program for PrEP is well beyond just the pill. So in my PrEP program to help people with PrEP persistence, we use a variety of different methods. The first is our clinic and our clinic staff do a lot of text messaging with our patients. So they will have the nurses, the CMAs, including me as the provider, our cell phone numbers, they can text directly to us. They can also use their electronic medical record to reach out to us for requests for refills or engagement, or just say, hey, I think I need additional STI testing. So accessibility is extremely important. So our first approach is to make ourselves as accessible as possible. Our second approach is to ensure that that creation of that welcome, open environment with a sex-positive conversation is always present. There is never a time in which a patient comes in and they've made a decision, whether it's new partners, multiple partners, chemsex, when they were engaging in high-risk sex with the use of substances. Whatever that circumstance may be, we approach it with a sense of humility and we try to be as graceful as possible and engage in a conversation that is not in any way stigmatizing or causes them to feel shame about the circumstance. So, and we really do model that with all level of our staff, and we try to do that. The third is, even when I'm not in clinic, my staff can overbook me for a random telemedicine throughout the week. That's, you know, we all know that telemedicine visits are short. They're, you know, can be episodic. We can get them very quickly. And in a 20-minute, hey, I'm, you know, Jason, I think I've got something that needs to be further evaluated from a PrEP perspective or from an STI perspective. We try to be as maximally flexible with on-demand scheduling as possible. Now, on-demand doesn't mean real time. It will may often mean within 48 hours, but we try to be as flexible as possible. During that 48-hour period, we will also have mailed the patient a self-collection kit while they're waiting to see me on camera to allow them to also self-test and get that in the works through the staff as well. Finally, our community health workers really do engage with our PrEP patients on a way in which I, as the provider or my nurses, would not have the ability to do. So if at all possible, and you can engage a lower cadre of staff to be part of the team to help understand, particularly when patients miss visits, getting them rescheduled, getting their lab evaluations routinely collected. And this was going to become even more important if a patient begins long-acting injectable cabotegravir. We have a small window to provide the injection for the patient to be considered adherent. And because of the long pharmacologic tail, based on the fact that it's a long-acting injectable, we are obviously concerned the longer the patient goes after their most recent injection with the potential for breakthrough infection, and with breakthrough, the potential for resistance to the integrase inhibitor class of medication. So in those circumstances, we double down on our efforts to try to bring and re-engage a person who has missed an injection on long-acting cabotegravir. We not only will do text messages and phone calls, but if the patient's willing, we will even consider ways in which we can get injectables via mobile van out to the patient's home. So it is a variety of different approaches. Depending on your state and your state-based collaborative practice agreements that exist with your pharmacist, your pharmacy team at your local pharmacies can be great extenders to be able to offer injectable cabotegravir in those settings. Importantly, only a few states allow such collaborative practice agreements, but if they do, and they can help facilitate, and they have therapeutic injectable practice privileges. Our state, for example, in Maryland, just allowed in the passage of a recent bill in 2022, therapeutic injections for pharmacists. And we're still working with our pharmacy teams to do the appropriate preparations and training. So we are not yet implementing this model, but the plan is to put this in place within early 2023. So that our patients wouldn't have to come into a clinic every 2 months to receive long-acting injectable. They could go to their local pharmacy chain and receive that injection. Thinking outside the box, and particularly thinking outside of your clinic walls, when you see patients in need of support for PrEP persistence is great. One final point is also consider working with your local community-based organization. They have a lot of peer support that can include helping you and your practice, oftentimes without additional fee or charge, keep your patients engaged in PrEP. Obviously, there is a need for a patient's willingness to be supported by individuals outside of your practice or outside of your health system or your clinic. There need to be willing to release that information to a CBO who might be supportive. But CBOs have a lot of support to help patients get on and access PrEP, and they can be helpful to your clinic in the right community to help your patients remain engaged in PrEP.
Thank you very much to Dr. Farley, and thank you to our listeners for joining in. Please be sure to check back regularly for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thank you, and have a great day.